million. So you see there's a really big gap there, and that is really hamstringing some of the states.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Emily Bazelon, staff writer at The New York Times Magazine. We will link to your cover story, Can Democracy Survive the Pandemic? And I want to thank Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold joining us from Denver. And that does it for our broadcast. The amazing Democracy Now! Team is working with as few people as possible on site, the majority of our team working from home. Special thanks to our general manager, Julie Cross. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Adriano Contreras, and Maria Tarasena. Special thanks to Miriam Barnard, Dennis Moynihan, Paul Powell. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. It's about 8 o'clock, and it is time for... Well, it's time for you to mind the gap.
Good morning, Portland and the world beyond. How's it going? It is I, Tammy, the public affairs director here at the station. And on the line with me is the lovely, charming, amazing Althea Billings from the news department. Hello, Althea.
Hello. Thanks for hyping me up.
It's the truth. I only speak the truth. And for those of you who might not know, Althea is the news department, the news director for the news department. Really has been doing an amazing job with the news, doing it remotely, as all the programmers are doing things remotely because of the COVID pandemic. And Althea, that brings us to the subject of the day. Would you like to talk a little bit about what we're going to start off with?
Yeah, one of the things that I want to talk about is, what have celebrities been up to? You know, turns out they've been doing a lot of dumb things. Is what we've been seeing. You know, there's a whole bunch of different instances of just kind of like celebrity weirdness or celebrities not really knowing what to do with themselves. And you can kind of like see the fear in their eyes, you know, because they're not shielded from it.
Madonna says the great equalizer.
Yeah, there's this video of, like, Madonna sitting in, like, a bath full of rose petals talking about how it's the great equalizer and it doesn't care how... that COVID doesn't care how rich you are, which, is, as we know, is a bit of a tone-deaf thing to say. COVID does sort of... it does kind of care about that. And, you know, I will say that for a decent amount of people, it wasn't until the news hit that, oh, Tom Hanks has it. It was like, oh no, it's real. Tom Hanks has COVID-19. I could get it because Tom Hanks is my friend from TV, you know?
So at least you know it's a family-friendly virus. I'm kidding.
But yeah, celebrities have just been having a hard time, whether it's going live on Instagram, saying some stuff that, you know, isn't medically accurate, saying things that are rather tone deaf about how, you know, they can't feel bad about any of the things that they have, but you should donate to this organization, even though they're worth X amount of money. It's interesting to me to kind of see them flail, I guess.
I wonder if it's from trying to stay relevant, or if it's because I'm guessing they're not working, you know, like, because they can't social distance themselves in Hollywood, but, you know, they can do it in their multi-million dollar estates and stuff, you know?
Right. I think it's that. And I think it's also, I don't know. It's a weird phenomenon of being so far out of touch. But at the same time, I think about how, like, actors are the people who've always been actors. You know what I mean? Like, there's a stereotype of what, like, you know, your theater kids in high school were like. Actors are not those people. You know, like Vanessa Hudgens of High School Musical fame going on Instagram Live. She went on Instagram Live and said, like, she was upset about Coachella being canceled, and she was saying that, like, oh, like 45,000 people are gonna die, but like they're gonna die. It's inevitable. She's sort of like,
and at the end, she's like, maybe I shouldn't do this, but it's like, you know, the egg has been cracked already.
Yeah, the words came out of your mouth, my friend, and we did hear you say that. Or whether it's, you know, Dr. Phil going on Fox News to say that social distancing was wrong and we shouldn't do that. But when pressed about, hey, what should we have done instead, just didn't have any ideas. I will say, folks, Dr. Phil, not a real doctor.
Can you just do that? Well, I guess Dr. Dre did. I think Dr. Dre actually recently got a doctorate in something. Can you just call yourself a doctor?
Yeah, I mean, who are you asking permission from? If it's from a university with a doctorate program... why is this a hard question to answer? Because I don't know that Dr. Drew is a doctor either.
Oh, well, you're trying to tell me Judge Judy isn't a real judge? I don't believe anymore.
Have you seen the show Community?
Of course.
Dean Pelton's first name is Dean. He's not like qualified.
And of course, there is the biggest celebrity. That's the head celebrity that's at the White House, that's also just up there with Vanessa, I can't say her last name, with just saying crazy wild stuff that's kind of like maybe dangerous, because, you know, celebrities might not be, you know, the most, it's not like hard-hitting stuff, but they do have a lot of impressionable people watching them, whether they're teens, tweens, children, or even like, you know, 30-something-year-olds. So when they say these things, I think, when they are so tone deaf, I think it can be a little bit dangerous, almost as much as, like, you know, the president saying it, you know, for a different, you know, group of people, different scale, of course.
Right. Well, and it's not a great comparison to compare it to like California wildfires or hurricane season in the southeastern United States, but you know, you do see sort of like outpourings of support from celebrities during those kinds of situations, you know, where they're like, oh, like, this is terrible. You guys, we need to care about this and give money to the Red Cross or whatever it is. But that, you know, the platform isn't directing it to somebody else, but maybe it's instilling some kind of fear of like, oh, it's me, I could get it, and I'm not protected for wealth and for status. But yeah, I don't know. I think we didn't even talk about the Imagine video that Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman herself, put together of celebrities, you know, on their front-facing cameras singing parts of John Lennon's Imagine.
Oh gosh!
According to her, it was inspired by, you know, people singing that song in Italy on their balconies during like their really intensive quarantine, when we were more focused on Italy than on the United States. But it's wild. There's so many people in that video, and I can't speak for everybody. Maybe somebody did ask for it, but I didn't ask for that.
I did not ask for that.
I didn't need Wonder Woman to look at her front camera on her phone and sort of like, I mean, not to say she's not like on key, you know, like if it was a good performance of Imagine, maybe I would feel differently about it. But also, I don't know that John Lennon would stand by this action that you're taking.
I know, that's just the thing. It's like, out of all the people, I feel like John Lennon, you know, rest in power and all, but I don't think he'd be down for that. I think he'd want a more and more of, like, direct action type of thing. I don't speak for him or his estate or the Beatles, but I guess, I don't know, it does seem kind of counterproductive. And like you mentioned, when there are all these, you know, natural disasters and stuff, there is a lot of this get piling on. Proud to be an American after 9/11, when there was like
right. Just
every single celebrity from all decades was on that track. And then so there was a comedian, and she said, if people keep making songs about the coronavirus is going to get a Grammy, so you better stop. So she brings up a good point. It's like, especially in this age of social media, right, where, you know, like how you saw with the fellow with the odd mustache that said, what's his name? The guy, the Believers, blonde.
Justin Bieber.
Yes.
Justin Bieber went on Instagram Live with his wife and Kendall Jenner, and also kind of flaunted wealth, I suppose.
Because they're so hashtag blessed, you know, but they can't feel bad about it being hashtag blessed because, you know, they're blessed, right? But just the fact that if he did have a filter or at least that one moment to think about it, or even just not have the ability to go live on Instagram, then he'd probably be in a better shape than he is right now. And, you know, and it's not just celebrities, you know, they're, you know, everyday people that also take to the gram or the social medias and spew these things that are like kind of strange, right? Or just like you said, tone deaf. But then celebrities have these platforms where they have like thousands and thousands of people watching them. So is it negligence, do you think? And then the same thing can be said about the president, right?
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, shout out to publicists and public relations people of, you know, of the pre-social media time who maybe would have vetted a statement from a particular celebrity. you know, I think that those are the days in which this sort of like culture of trusting celebrities and what they say and what they do, that's where that came from, you know? And now we're in a world where it's celebs, they're just like us, but that also means they just also say and do dumb things and don't actually know all the facts and don't necessarily take things seriously.
But then also in the same light, I wonder, like, you know, whenever a celebrity, you know, tries to do something good, like I remember when we spoke with the Portugal the Man Foundation, and I asked, I think John was like, I was like, what do you think about when people say celebrities or musicians just stick to music and not get political? And his answer was really good. You know, the fact that he does, you know, they do go and they travel so much. They travel so much, and they see so many people in so many different venues, you know, coupled with the work that they do with indigenous youth and in politics and stuff. So it, you know, it makes you wonder also, like, because, you know, his answer was so enlightening too, because he is on the ground, and when you see all these things and you're exposed to all these things, how do you not have the want to make it better, you know?
Totally.
But then singing Imagine to the front of your camera on your phone, as opposed to like donating a couple of thou, you know. I guess
that's
the difference.
And I don't know. I think that if celebrities are like, hey, I'm here to entertain, you know, that's what I've always done. It's a rough time. Why don't you watch me make up a song on the spot or whatever? Whatever you want to do, celebrities that are listening to this, waiting with bated breath for my recommendation. I think that that's fine, but I think it's a rarity when someone from a celebrity from a different field has, you know, the wherewithal and the awareness to enter into like political discussions, especially ones that are really fraught. You know, like, we're talking about people dying and having disparate impacts on older people, but also, you know, black and brown people of color who have been, you know, who are in a worse situation now because of years of racism and redlining and, you know, not taking care of the climate. So entering into that conversation and like Madonna sulking in the bath about how your riches can't save you. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. I wasn't waiting for Madonna to tell me how it is, you know. I know how it is. And maybe this is the point at which we can look to, you know, noteworthy people from other fields for guidance, and, you know, that have had enough, you know, that are educated on this kind of stuff and that work on these issues and celebrate and uplift them. Which isn't to say that actors and celebrities don't have a place in our culture, but that they're not the beginning or the end of, you know, public discourse, I guess.
And I, you know, just to play, now I don't want to say devil's advocate, because, you know, the devil has enough advocates between the church and the cops, right? Just to twiddle your thumb there. But there are some people who would take something that a celebrity would say with more respect than what authority figures would say about certain things, you know? So they'll, you know, how they say, oh, well, the CDC says don't touch your face, but, I don't know, Grassington from The Grass Show said that I should touch my face, you know? And so that, and then that, is that like, accountability, is that just personal, like, you know, educating yourself on who's saying what and why? And hey, you know what I say, question everything all the time, constantly.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it reminds me of, I think it was 2016, when it was like a really big deal that celebrity Taylor Swift, pop star Taylor Swift, had not really been political up until that point. Had never like declared her political leanings, which was definitely objectionable to some, but she like encouraged people, specifically the people who like are fans of her, to go out and vote, and there was like a marked increase in like a marked uptick in people registering to vote, like connected to her making that an announcement. A bunch of people went out and registered to vote because Taylor Swift advocated for them to do so. So it isn't to say that they don't, you know, have a place in the conversation, but I mean, I think what in some of the examples that we were talking about, and there's more out there if you're curious to see what kind of oddball stuff celebrities have been dishing out, but I think it has to do with this idea, like, that the meritocracy idea kind of falls a little bit flat, and it's like, yeah, you are where you are in part because of work that you did and choices that you made, but ultimately you're really lucky. There's also other talented people who don't enjoy the same luxuries that you do. Mm-hmm. And even just acknowledging that, from my perspective anyway, would make a really big difference to be like, you know, not that I'm waiting with bated breath for Justin Bieber to do the right thing or whatever, but if he had said instead that, like, oh yeah, we're like really lucky to be in this situation, you know, like we worked hard but we're really lucky that, you know, it worked out for us, or that we knew these people or met them at this particular time, or this song struck a chord with the people, you know, like there's it comes to mind that, like, you know, there's people on the internet who will try to like sell you on the idea of like, oh, I can teach you to become an influencer, like I'll show you how to be famous. And it's like, I mean, there's certain things I guess that you could do, but so much of it is luck and being in the right place at the right time and knowing people, that it's not like a path that people can aspire to, because the nature of fame is that there's not everybody can be it, you know?
Oh yeah,
that's my point.
Yeah, it's, and you know, we live in Portland, it's there's so many talented musicians in this town. I mean, you chuck a rock and you know you hit someone who can just, you know, make you, you know, play something on a guitar, they'll, you know, or they'll make you just cry or something, you know. So, but I think it's Woody Allen or Steven Spielberg, some one of them says, talent is like table salt. It's cheap because it's hard work that gets you placed. So that's interesting about Taylor Swift. And, you know, that's another thing. Hillary Clinton, when she was running, who did she have on stage with her? Ms. Beyonce, you know? She wouldn't reach out to Beyonce. She didn't think there would be some sort of pull. So there's definitely like an understanding that, I guess it all goes back to power, man, you know? And I just wanted to give the number out if anyone wants to chit-chat and give us your opinions, thoughts, 503-231-8187. You're listening to The Gap on KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. On the line is Althea Billing, and I'm Tammy from the Public Affairs Department. Althea is the news director, and Sonia is our engineer. Hello, Sonia.
Hi.
Hey. Yeah.
I had a thought on the whole thing about hard work and talent, mm-hmm. and but you also need the luck. And so many things about this have really reminded me of all the studies in formal logic I did in college. And we talk about conditions, necessity and sufficiency. You know, without the talent and the hard work, yeah, you're not going to get anywhere. Well, it'll be a lot harder for you to get anywhere. And so they are necessary, but they aren't sufficient, right? Mm. It's like I always fall back on the analogy of or metaphor, I guess, of the light of the flashlight. You got to have, you know, fresh batteries, but you know, a couple of batteries all by themselves aren't going to cast any light. You got to have the right housing, you got to have the switch, and you got to have a bulb, right? All of those are necessary, but no one of them by themselves, or even two or three of them, are sufficient. You got to have it all together, right? All the components are necessary, and all of them together is sufficient to cast a beam of light.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a really nice way of looking at it. Plus, it has light in it, which I always like, because, you know, darkness is scary.
Well said. Yeah, if anyone wants to join the conversation, I would love to know if you've ever been inspired to do something because of a celebrity who wasn't, like, in that field, per se. Because they definitely, I mean, look, having clout of any kind can be translated into a different field, you know? Seeing that Beyonce supported Hillary Clinton didn't mean nothing to people. It didn't mean nothing to me. You know, you heard the song at the beginning of the hour. But it's also interesting how it's treated in the media, because it's often a situation where, you know, like pro athletes or celebrities, when they say something political or take some kind of political action, like you said, Tammy, they're told to like go back in their corner and, you know, make merry for the people that look at you rather than use their platform for change.
You know what celebrity doesn't get that kind of pushback? Is Ted Nugent.
Who?
That's a good point. Ted Nugent. You know who does? Let's go back and talk about 2003, shall we?
Oh, the Dixie Chick. They did not like George Bush at all.
You know, nor did Neil Young. And what I found really interesting is that people who cheered and sang along and got up and danced while he performed songs like Southern Man and Ohio, which... you know, stay tuned for that, suddenly got really angry about how he shouldn't be bringing in politics once he started singing a new song called Impeach the President for Lying.
Right.
Interesting.
So
right.
It's not about that they're celebrities. It's about the message. They don't like their message. They say, they're not saying you shouldn't be saying things, you shouldn't be sticking your nose in the public sphere because you're in the civic sphere, political sphere, because you're an entertainer. They're saying you shouldn't say that. You shouldn't give that message.
Right. If it was a pro-establishment type of, like, do celebrities get into hot waters for doing pro-establishment stuff?
I haven't heard of any such case. Have you, listener?
I haven't heard of,
give us a call at 803-531-8187.
Except for Kanye and Stacey Dash, who are both black and who are pro-establishment. So I can't think. I'm trying to think of other ones, because that's interesting. That's a really, really good point. And it you know, peels another layer off of it.
Yeah, this whole thing isn't content neutral.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
The other thing is that, like, celebrities and, you know, people in the art world often have been, like, more related to more progressive social issues because of the nature of the entertainment industry, like, before public consciousness was necessarily there. I mean, I'm thinking of Lucille Ball advocating for, like, black actresses in her time, but also, you know, Britney Spears posting on Instagram that, you know, we need socialism, and that we're going to connect through the ways of the web, and that, you know, eat the rich, essentially.
That was scary. That was real scary, Britney. I was shook.
Just her gym burned down. That was the other thing she was
One thing led to another. Shout out to Virginia.
Yeah.
Spears.
Oh, I'm in my gym right now. I haven't been in here in 6 months because it burned down. It's like, whoa.
I had candles, and one thing led to another.
Everything burned down. It's like, well, and now people are calling her Comrade Britney, which I think is pretty funny.
Get me out of here. You know, you bring up another good point. And mainstream media, you know, and when you were an indie artist and not signed and, you know, still do it, you know, it's basically like, you know, roaming the underground, as they say. Being political and anti-establishment seems to be the thing, you know? It's kind of like, that's pretty much what the underground is for. But I wonder if once people get to a certain plateau, if they cannot do that anymore. You know, because now they've peaked, now they're not underground, now they're mainstream, and now they can't say the same stuff or be as radical as they were before. But then you have, you know, artists like Woody Guthrie and I'm trying to think of more recent ones
to your point that I think once artists go more mainstream, once they sign to whatever, you know, sort of media organization they're affiliated with, it's not just their interests anymore. You know, it's like their interests are now tied up with other interests, like who are the investors in the record label or whatever.
Shareholders.
And I think
and
you see the same, like it's this exact same, like a very similar phenomenon, let's say, to, you know, the revolving door of lawmakers and lobbyists. You know, like you get to that echelon of power and all of a sudden your success is tied up with other people who, you know, an earlier version of you might not have agreed with or wanted to be in bed with, so to speak. But that, you know, power wants to hold on to power, and that's the nature of the thing.
Interesting. Oh, so many good points. If the you really got my brain thinking on that one, because it really goes back to just power and its grip on people, and I think maybe these celebrity blunders are kind of they're spewing out whatever they can to try to appease it, maybe, you know, or maybe rebel against it, you know, their own way of rebelling, because that's pretty much all they have left right now is, like, it's pretty much the only thing that there isn't under control of someone else, you know, they don't have a publicist and this and that, they have their phone and they just apparently upload crazy stuff on there. If you want to get into conversation, 503-231-8187 is the number. KBOO is the station. 90.7 is the dial. Let's see, Althea.
What we were saying earlier about, like, luck and how, you know, success, you can work towards it and, you know, find rewards along the way, but success in terms of, like, fame and notoriety is a lot of times based on luck, kind of brings me to thinking about, like, all the conspiracy theories that have been floating around about the pandemic, about all kinds of stuff. 5G, I don't pretend to know what the entirety of those conspiracy theories entail, but I find it so interesting, like, why is it that people are attracted to those types of conspiracies?
I wonder if it's like an explanation to the unknown or something, because, you know, with this pandemic, we're seeing that there's so many unknown variables constantly, and we're getting bombarded with information that, I mean, Facebook was, you know, deleting posts. I saw in the beginning of this whole thing, Facebook was deleting posts left and right, anything that had to do with the coronavirus, right? And then it started, you know, sending these apology things and I think now there's a lot less, you know, they're not monitoring it as much, because Netflix is putting on a whole conspiracy thing on their platform. So, is it an answer to the unknown? I don't know. Is it just trying to grasp at something.
The idea that it was planned or that certain corporations did it. I don't know if it's big personal protective equipment finally, you know, gripping the reins of power or whatever, but it does give you some kind of explanation that's an alternative to that, you know, it's random. The universe, our world is chaotic and weird. And this is the threat that we're facing right now. Coronavirus doesn't have a face. There's not a person. Well, there's not like one bad actor who made it all happen for us.
Yeah.
You know, and you can dispute that with what, you know, certain global leaders' responsibilities are. But it wasn't one person who did this to us who we could seek retribution or restitution from, you know? And we don't know. It's also part, I think, a reaction to the fact that we don't know what's coming in the future. We don't know. Mm-hmm. We have some knowledge that it'll take X amount of time to come up with a vaccine if things go well. But there's still a chance of mutation. And, like, staring into that void is terrifying, and I don't recommend anybody really do it on the regular. But I think
it's a thin line between being informed but trying to keep a peace of mind.
Yeah, because I think there's also a lot of, I don't know, for me personally, guilt associated with, you know, the idea if I were to stick my head in the sand and not pay attention to it, I feel like I'm obligated to. But I know that it's a tough thing in preserving your mental well-being, especially when, you know, a lot of, I can speak for myself, a lot of my regular coping mechanisms aren't accessible to me right now in the way that they would be if the economy was open. So
you're getting
I
back
don't
to
recommend that. Yeah.
Getting back
to, well, you know, you can always start making videos in TikTok.
Yeah, there you go. What's up, Sonia?
Getting back to the thing about how once you've reached a certain level, you know, and other interests start to by force having to like merge other interests with your own. A caller has some ideas. This is York. Go ahead, you're on the air, York.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just, when you brought up Arlo Guthrie and then there was, and then drew a blank, I had a few other people that came to mind, like
it was
Peter
Woody.
Gabriel still does really great stuff. Pearl Jam, those guys are really socially conscious and they fought the system their whole way up, and you know, even in the height of their fame. Fugazi, of course. There was one other person. Well, Bono, if you want to really that may stir some resentment at that, but no, there are still a lot of people who have made it really, really big that maintain a certain amount of integrity and fight for the good fight, you know, despite having to hold on to that a certain amount of power. Maybe it's because the power is not the important part, but the creativity and the expression is the important part for them. So make the difference.
Yeah, thanks, caller. I think that's a point well taken.
I'm always going to be pro anyone and anything that ever mentions Fugazi, so heck yeah. I mean, I didn't think that they were that big. When you're living on the East Coast, it feels like everything is just local.
I heard that some venture capitalist had bought out Fugazi's thing, was jacking up the price of their CDs to $9.
I'm going to smash my phone into pieces. I'm going to
No, that was from the hardtimes.net. It's like a punk rock onion.
Oh, okay.
It's the same one that said, like, my favorite piece from there was, like, it said, a trans person crossed the street to avoid performative support from liberals. And the funny thing is, the photo accompanying that article was snapped at Southeast 9th and Clay, like five blocks from the studio here.
Oh. Yeah, didn't realize the hard time was... someone from Portland. Darn, I forgot their name. I just recently realized it was someone from Portland that created that. So that's pretty awesome. I think two people, one of them from Portland. Now I'm just thinking of Fugazi songs. Thank you, York. I really appreciate it. You made my morning. I wanted to, before we get back to celebrity blunders, the struggles between power, the have and have nots, and the kind of have them. I wanted to talk about my friend Selena, who is doing portraits. I can't say it right. It's basically you stand outside of your house, and Selena takes a picture of you outside your porch, whether it's an apartment or a house or, you know, whatever. And if you're interested in doing this, it's basically a way of documenting how people are getting through the coronavirus. So if you're interested in doing this, you can hit her up on the Instagram. The handle name is Selena Forest. That's C-E-L-I-N-A Forest Photo. Hopefully you can get your portrait taken. And if you're interested, reach out to her. It's a very interesting project. I'm very interested to see how it's going to look like. Very, you know, the plague-looking thing.
Now, Flores Photo, is that F-L-O-R-E-S?
What's that?
For Flores Photo, is that F-L-O-R-E-S?
Selena Flores. Yeah, Flores.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'll be interested to see how, like, the pandemic will be in, like, I don't know, the cultural imagination in retrospect, you know? Like, there's a meme online about how, you know, high school students taking, like, an AP history class 30 years from now are going to have to write an essay about what was going on at this time, and some kid's going to draw a blank. And it was a hard time, and people were it was sad, and they had to stay inside, and that was doing this, and which is kind of funny. But also, like, I could see a sitcom bottle episode taking place during the pandemic. I don't know. What do you think, Tammy?
I'm hoping that the only thing that it's like in 20, 30 years from now, the only thing that's left is like these videos of the celebrities that are like, oh, we're so hashtag blessed, but like we worked hard for it. It's such a hard time. And like Madonna in her milk bath, talking about the great equalizer. That would suck. They'll be like, it looks like they actually wasn't that difficult. Everyone was living in mansions and stuff. Like, it looked really great.
Yeah.
Not a true representation.
Well, I also feel like I won't be ready for pandemic related content for a little while, you know? Like,
Black Mirror has been doing any episodes right now.
I saw that. The creator's like, things are too bad right now. No Black Mirror for you.
He manifested it. That's the problem. He brought this upon us.
That's the conspiracy theory. That's what we got to go after. That's a joke, folks. That's a joke.
Totally kidding. Just kidding. I do wonder if things are going to be, you know, going back to like, you know, film and celebrities and art and the arts, if now there's going to be a focus on the outdoors and like being outdoor and like physical touch and like, you know, because we've been deprived of it for what, going on 3 months now personally. You know, if there's going to be like this big upsurge in like visual representations of like being alone yet together, and you know how that whole arena is going to change and stuff.
Yeah, well, and I mean, so many like movies and books and TV shows are centering one sort of like tortured creative.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what, you know, what the TV writers and the who's got their spec script ready, their screenplay going, about what the tortures of quarantine.
Right, they're like just ready for it. We've been writing about it since the beginning of time.
Yeah, or feeling, I bet there's a storyline about feeling guilty about not being productive enough.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a little bit of that. But then I will, like, sweep my kitchen floor and I'll be like, I'm okay.
There you go.
I did something that was the right thing to do. I still got it.
I find that having something to look forward to helps me a lot. So, like, I'll go take the dog out for a walk and leave, like, soup or something, you know, on the burner on a real low fire and just kind of have something to look forward to when I get home. Because soup is, yeah, the main thing that I have going for me right now, and the dog.
Soup and a dog. That's not bad. That could be your band name.
Soup and Dog. Oh, so cute.
or a children's superhero.
Oh my god, Oh, Esther.
A dog like Popeye eating spinach, but a dog who eats soup to stop crime.
This is your screenplay that you're talking about.
Trademark. It's mine.
So Hollywood. So because you are the news director, I wanted to get an update from you about the what's going on as far as reopening, because I thought the 15th meant, you know, things are going to be popping and open, but apparently not everywhere.
Not everywhere, no. There's 31 counties who are starting phase one today of the governor's reopening plan. there were 28 yesterday. A few more got approved, and then Marion County and another one in the Salem area, which is slipping my mind at the moment, got denied because there has been an uptick in and around Salem. But basically what that means is that, you know, your in-person businesses can reopen so long as they are able to maintain strict social distancing, and in order to apply, the counties had to have contact tracing ready to go. They had to have a certain level of preparedness and to have demonstrated a downtick ahead of the date, which is today. So, you know, if you're in basically any county except for the Tri-County area around Portland or right in and around Salem, you know, you can make an appointment, go to a salon, probably get your hair cut, I think.
Why?
Gyms are going to reopen, except not with showers or pools. Bars have to close at 10. And social distancing still applies, which I think it's going to be very interesting, because I think we've been sort of anticipating that this is coming for some time. But to see what that really looks like in person will be very interesting. And I mean, a qualifier of the phase one reopening is that the county has to like keep their numbers low, and if there's any, over the next 2 weeks or so, if there's any demonstrable uptick related to the economic reopening, they're going to get shut back down. But I will say, hey, don't just go to where it's open if you live somewhere where it's closed. That seems counterproductive, but that's what a lot of people have been doing. You know, it was hot last weekend, people headed out to the coast,
right, because of cars. yeah,
nobody got arrested, but there were cops out there trying to shoo like 800 people away who were trying to get to the beach, which I feel for them. You know, I wish I could be in the water, but it's not that situation. But yeah, it'll be
get yourself a hose,
you're
good.
Yeah.
Get a hose, plug it into the sink, you're good. Get some duct tape.
Everyone, the ultimate antidote to coronavirus. Just get hosed off before you come inside. Don't go to the beach. You have to stand over there, get sprayed with the hose.
With the reopening, so I guess that would mean, so if bars are open, I just wanted to mention Multnomah County didn't even ask to reopen, so we're like, nah,
Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas didn't apply, well, they didn't meet the even criteria to be able to apply, whether or not the governor was going to approve it. We're on a little bit of a different timeline in terms of what's going on, because it is these counties are a lot more population dense, and so meeting those initial requirements of having adequate contact tracing support and procedure in place, as well as adequate social distancing, is something that has not been met, and you know, the number of cases and the rate of infection.
So let's say like down in Marion County, the bar is open, right? Let's say usually there's 30 people there. I'm guessing that because of the social distancing thing, they will not be able to operate on full capacity, neither on a staff level or on a patron level, right? That's just my assumption. So
yeah.
How are they planning? Man, that's going to be really just a big financial blow for a lot of people. How would they even be able to make ends meet is the question. If they're operating
Like, will it be worthwhile for them to, like, it'll cost them more to operate than they'll make?
That's what I'm asking. I wonder, unless they really just crank up the prices on things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's their calculus to make, but I guess if there's less patrons, you probably need fewer bartenders.
Alcohol is a very high margin item, though. You can, I mean, bars really do. That's where like their biggest margin item there is booze. That's why waiters, you know, at a restaurant, they're always like, start you off with some drinks, because they want you drinking, because that's where they make their money. So
yeah, we were just giving us all the goodies. Okay, now I know.
That's well, something to say, I mean, about the nature of art, too.
It's the nature of art.
Just judging by, you know, like when I go on a walk and I see how the people in my neighborhood greet me now in a way that they didn't during the pandemic, before times. As
the long, long ago?
the long, long ago. Way back when we used to walk 10 miles uphill to school both ways.
No, we used to walk within 5 feet of a stranger and not even think about it.
Yeah. It's like, those were the days. But anyway. People look at me and, like, they want to acknowledge me, you know? Like, I think they're really craving that social connection. So even if you're in a bar with six people, it's like, oh, I'm with six people in a room. Cool.
That's when I see a face that I'm familiar with, it feels weird now. It's like, whoa, you're in real life, especially if I Zoom with them a lot and then I see them in real life. It's trippy. It's like, whoa. And I want to touch them. So like, I want to like shake their hands or, you know, consensually touch them or something, but you just can't, you know, you cannot do it. Ugh.
Yeah.
Has anyone gotten that thing where you like, you're watching an old TV program or show or movie or something, and you see all these people who are like within 6 feet of each other and even touching, and it seems strange. Has anyone gotten that yet?
Oh, it trips me out. It trips me out. What are you guys doing? That's not safe. Get away from there. What is this, a group of more than 25 people?
Stop it. I'm calling Kate Brown right now.
Sick 'em.
Yeah.
Someone get the state troopers on the line. Y'all are way too close.
Oof.
Well, it's interesting to think of, like, will that sort of, like, psychological impact of recognizing the dangers of, like, the transmission of germs, whether or not that's coronavirus, like, will that still exist? Here's the real question. Are people going to mosh after all of this is over? You know?
That is a real question. I went to a TSOL concert, shout out TSOL, February, and I stood by the bar with my arms crossed, not trying to touch anything or anyone. Were people moshing? Heck yeah, they were. And they were very close and very like, hey, what's your name? I'm like, dude, Corona, get away. But someone said to me, punks are dirtier than Corona, so we're okay. That's just something someone told me. I'm advocating, or am I disagreeing with that? But all of that type of stuff. Yeah, you're right.
I was at a show on February 7th at the Hawthorne, and there was a pit, and it was, you know, gnarly, and it was kind of annoying. I mean, this may just be that I'm over 40, and it's like, y'all, I'm not here to get hurt. I'm here to, you know, hear like my friends play really good music. You know, like, knock it off, or do it over there.
Yeah. In the past weeks, I've like felt myself becoming more paranoid as I like go outside, which I've, you know, been working to dispel. But like going to the gas station, which, you know, Oregon, we usually have attendance, and having that gas station be deserted and like people doing it themselves, and we're on the opposite sides of the same machine, and it's like, are we too close to each other? It's so eerie. Usually someone does this for me.
Whenever you check out at the grocery store, and if the lines are, it's just so, it's like, am I too close? Am I not close enough? And then every once in a while, you have someone who just like does not care, and they just rub up against you, keep walking, and you're like, wait, should I have moved? Should they have moved? And the whole situation is just kind of, it's like the social etiquette from this is also something. Is it going to resonate with our society?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm walking down the middle of the road to stay away from people.
We've been walking down the middle of the road as well, Esther and I. I'm very glad to have and she's, you know,
she's on a leash. So if I kind of have like a parameter around me, because if someone does get too close, I can tell that they're a little too close, because, you know, the dog leash is at least, you know, 6 feet.
Yeah. Well, all the dogs in my neighborhood, like, I know they want to come see me and be my friend, and I can't pet them. And that was one of the first things that was, you know, emotionally painful from the pandemic, because I can't go pet your dog.
Oh, Esther, you hear that? People miss you.
I miss you, Esther.
I'm really glad that we got to talk about the whole celebrity aspect of this whole thing, because, oh, and also I didn't mention, did you hear that Jada Pinkett Smith says that she doesn't even know who Will Smith is anymore? She thought she knew him, she doesn't even know him. If they break up, I mean, this is a serious, that's something my mom told me. She said a friend of hers already got divorced because of the coronavirus. She said they were 2 months together in the house, they couldn't do it anymore. And I'm
that was
interesting.
That was the thing in once Wuhan, the province in China, started to reopen, like, day of, 88 couples filed for divorce.
Really?
After being under lockdown for that amount of time, yeah.
Good. I'm no social psychologist, but that tells you something.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's a revealing time. I think it's a stressful time, you know, close quarters, no coping mechanisms, mortal fear, all of which might amount to a, you know, disharmonious couple of months at home with your spouse.
That's really interesting. I wonder if that in itself will have some sort of repercussion on, you know, art, the culture, society, and also, you know, celebrities. I mean, if Will Smith is going to be single?
Or even the impact on dating, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Is it a calculus? It's like, could I spend 3 months inside with no contact with other people with this person? Like,
you meet
what are
your
personal
habits? Could I quarantine
habits?
With them?
Could I quarantine with you? How clean do you like your room? Are you going to clean up the kitchen when you're done? Will you go outside if I tell you I need space? You know what I mean?
But are those real questions you should already be asking? You know, is that what partnership is? Like, to, you know, are you going to give me space when I need it, even though you're also in your head, too? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
not a partnership,
no,
but it's like,
so.
These are the real questions. How clean are you? Yeah, that is definitely, you should know that before you get into a corona situation with someone, yeah.
Right. Get along to get along is maybe
a corona ship, as they say.
A corona
no one said that. I am saying this for the first time. You can trademark it.
People say quarantine buddy. Neither of which really rolls off the tongue. So maybe you do have an opportunity to kind of coin that turn of phrase.
The corona ship. It's not a relationship. It's the breakup after. But that's an interesting thought. You know, I never want to, like, laugh at someone's misfortune and, you know, like, you know, inability to cope and, you know, having their partner leave them or vice versa, right?
No.
It's just interesting that it's, you know, all of these things are, because it's not just a matter of being alone with yourself, right? It's also having someone else there, but on top of it, dealing with a pandemic, a global pandemic, you know, and, like, the fear from that as well. So, you know, some people break up, some people go on, you know, live and Instagram live and say crazy stuff, and then I wonder what other people do, you know, just how people get along.
Well, speaking of what other people do, Paul has something to say here. Go ahead, Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah,
sure can.
Great. I appreciate all how careful you all are being. I live in Clark County, Camas, Washougal, and I've noticed more than half of the people don't even seem to care or think it's real. I don't know if they're listening to Fox or what, but it's just strange how, you know, somebody will just come up right next to me, and it's not until I give them a stink eye, it's like, hey, buddy, I'm wearing a mask here. Can't you? It's strange. It's really strange. A lot of people just don't even seem to care or believe it. And then as to one of the reasons why, maybe, I think the behavior of the president is treasonous. I mean, it's just, he's doing everything wrong, and you know, people still follow his lead for some reason. What do you think?
Well, to the president aspect, it's interesting to think about, like, and I think this is a conversation that's been had for a long time in different ways, but what is enough to have people turn on him, you know? Like, and at this point we're talking, what is the death toll that is high enough that will make, you know, people see that he's acted in this way that's had real consequences for people?
We may have some kind of a sunk cost syndrome going here. You know, it's like, well, we've already put, like, to have stood by him this long, it just makes it feel, and makes you feel as though you look worse and worse, all the worse to, like, if you admit that you're wrong. If you admit that you'd been wrong this whole time, you know, so it just leads people to, like, just double down all the harder, because, you know, there's more and more at stake the worse and worse it gets. And they rather perversely become more and more invested in digging in all the deeper.
Yeah, it's like keeping up the facade, even though in some way or aspect you feel like there's something wrong with it. And that little tiny voice in your head that says that, like, that is your inner self, you know, that's your consciousness telling you, like, hold up, pump the brakes, something is wrong. That's your instinct, you know, that's like the thing that is within you, that is like, you know, your nature, your instinct, your gut feeling. And to ignore it, I don't know, every time I ignore my gut feelings, it kind of didn't end very well for me, you know? So if, yeah, you know, put the pride aside, and if that, it's going to conjure, no matter how much you try to ignore it. And then just at the end of the day, you're going to feel like a real dummy, because it's like, I knew this whole time, I knew, but I ignored it. That's just my two cents.
Well,
I appreciate your idea.
To the mask and the social distancing aspect, I do wonder or have a suspicion that once contact tracing becomes more prevalent and more accessible to people, if we won't see people be more cautious, because the consequence of your action will become apparent, right? More people will know if they're asymptomatic carriers, and based on the tracking that businesses will have to be doing, then they're going to know that, like, oh, I got contacted because I was in the grocery store when someone who ended up having it was there, and now I'm self-isolating for 2 weeks because I've been recommended to do so. And so, like, making that connection in such a way versus right now, which is the calculus is more, do I think I'm going to get it? Do I think it could do something really bad to me? Do I live with people who could be really impacted by it? Mm-hmm. That's the calculus that people are doing, not necessarily related to, you know, heightened ideas of who might have it if you yourself are not in one of those categories that requires you to be more cautious. So I wonder if we won't see people make that connection as time goes on.
Interesting. Having the tangible results and almost facts. And I'm getting that phone call saying, you were at the grocery store this and this time, this and that location, and someone that was in this and that feet away from you had the virus. That's terrifying. I don't want none of that. That's really scary. But
but knowing is better than not knowing, right?
See, now we're getting into an ethical discussion. Ah, now we're getting into, as they say, the beef and the potatoes.
Oh, is it?
But yeah, appreciate your opinion and question, Paul. Thank you. Oh, I guess not online anymore. Well, anywho's.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah, thank you. It's they say security over privacy, privacy over security. That's a whole thesis. That's a whole, I mean, people go to war for that, you know. That's another question to be asked about this. And
I wish we had more time to talk about it, but yeah. I think it was in the Willamette Week a week or two ago, because drafts of the governor's reopening plan had come out, talking about whether or not businesses could require patrons to wear face masks, or if they could require them to, like, take a temperature before they go in the door. And the lawyers that they consulted were like, yeah, they definitely can. The government is limited in what they can do, but businesses are a lot less limited when it comes to infringing on civil liberties like that.
Oh,
so we really might be in a situation where, you know, you write down your name, your number, your address, they take your temperature, 104, get out, you're not allowed to be here. yeah, I'll be interested to see how that rolls out and how people react to it, because it is a real change. You know, we haven't been in quarantine so long that I don't remember what it was like to walk into any store freely, you know.
It's just a memory. Wow, it tickles my fancy. Yeah, not just the people responding to it, but the business owners. Because if it's up to the business owners to make these decisions at the end of the day, are you going to have places that are more lax about the rules and others that are more... I mean, right now, you know, there is a difference between how Safeway is handling things versus New Seasons, right? So that's,
right.
That's also a discussion. And then is that another mirror onto society and what we are doing as people, individuals? It's all of these questions. Thank you so much for you know, spending this time and discussing this with me. Appreciate you, Althea. Thank you so much, Sonia.
Yeah, appreciate you.
And I think
right
it's
on.
Just about that time for us
it
to
is.
Wrap up. And thank you all so much. We'll be back next week.
And that was Mind the Gap, or Bridging the Gap, because girls are powerful. Those were my girls, Tammy and Althea. And this is your girl, Sonia, here, bringing you into the 9 o'clock hour at KBOO Portland, where coming up we have Veterans Voice with Marvin, with featuring a guest, Mr. Joe Lewis. We're going to get right to that in just a moment, so stay tuned.